At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Can we talk something else? Can we talk about something else?
Hello. Out there. Monsters, as they say, are among us. A bagger and a courtesy clerk at Safeway, working 2 to 4 shifts a week. That's who it could be. That's who it is, in this case. Online, he's known as That Stinky Boy. At school, from where 19-year-old Brian Cohee Jr. has recently graduated, he was known as Dahmer, for his sick sense of humor and darkness. Also for the rumors of him skinning roadkill and abducting neighborhood cats to torture, kill, decapitate. Brian is on the spectrum with high-functioning Asperger's and has ADHD as well as major depressive disorder, so most of what the bespectacled young man has to say or chooses to do is chalked up to those conditions. He's a bit of a brat. You can tell his parents treat him like he's a little boy still. Even though he is a big boy, a stinky boy, he can't help himself but make other people feel bad. That seems to be his tick. Brian might call a larger girl a pig, a POC, a POS, or whatever young white guys do for casual racism online these days, but really, Brian Cohee Jr. is considered by all to be fairly harmless. Just a little weird. Misunderstood, even. So on the late evening of Saturday, February 27th, 2021, he decided to make it clear what he was. Welcome to Dark Topic, I'm your host, Jack Luna. This is a true crime happening. Stinky Dirty. Sunday, February 28th, 2021, 2 a.m., Grand Junction, Colorado. The Blue Heron Boat Ramp by the Colorado River. That's where police have been called out to check on a gray Ford sedan that has apparently become stuck in the water. The responding officer doesn't expect this to be the literal situation and is surprised when it is. A car is in the river, sideways, just off a little ways from the muck of the gravel boat ramp. It's a chilly February night. Why would anyone be backing into the water at this hour without a boat? In these conditions is beyond anyone's understanding. For now. 19-year-old Brian Cohee Jr. sits shivering in the passenger seat of his father's black SUV. Senior is shaking too, but just his head. This is embarrassing. The mother, Terry, nervously greets the officer with a big smile and manic mannerisms. She points to the half-submerged vehicle and begins an explanation of how this happened. She's explaining it even though she's not the one who caused the situation. She's just parroting what her son, Brian, has told her. Brian had called her and her husband out here because he'd accidentally got stuck in the river. She explains that Junior is on his learner's permit. She laughs, as does the officer, when she exclaims that she'd held off allowing him to drive alone until he was 18 years old. The reason being that 16, 17-year-olds do a lot of stupid things. The laughter comes when she whispers to the cop that she guesses stupid knows no age. Brian Cohee Jr. looks on dumbly as his mother charms the deputy, or thinks she charms the deputy. He's just being polite, really. It is an unusual situation, and the cop can understand that everybody's a little embarrassed over what's going on here. Brian seems the least embarrassed of all, though he should be the most. He pushes up his glasses and adjusts himself in his seat, looking on kind of like a dog does when it's trying to figure out what you're trying to say to it. The heater blows warm air on his bare legs. Brian has no pants on, having become soaked when his car slipped into the river. His mom got him to take off his pants, and his dad is blasting the hot air so that he can stay warm. The father speaks up, which is always a little embarrassing with that speech impediment of his, and that's not nice, but Brian's not nice. He makes fun of his father for it all the time. The whole scene is quite surreal. Does nobody see what's going on here, Brian Jr. thinks? Of course they don't. People only see what they want to see. And this, as Brian Sr. explains, is just a case of a kid getting himself in over his head. Almost literally. Brian's dad goes on to share that he's the organizer of a life jacket donation program for boaters down here, or something like that. Who gives a shit, Sr.? Your kid's car is in the river and he's shivering with his pants off beside you. You're wasting everybody's time. The officer realizes this is a dumbass situation. He speaks briefly to the kid, a large boy of around 200 pounds and at least 6'1", hard to tell without his pants on. That's to say, he can't get out of the vehicle to show his full height. After a brief conversation where the odd young man shares the same basic story, but with more details, one where he drove out here to think after not being able to sleep, then got stuck turning around at the boat launch, Brian's father speaks up again. Wait, you turned around and backed in, Brian? The officer steps in to take the edge off here. Clearly this young man has made a mistake. No need to embarrass him further. No need to hear the father go on and on and on about things that don't matter. Arrangements are made for the car to be towed out of the river. The family are told that they can go home and the rest will get taken care of in time. For now, just go get Brian Jr. dry and get some rest. Thank you, officer. Not long after the Cohees returned to their ranch-style property out in the Colorado Hills, Brian's mother receives a call from the officer. He'd like them to come back out as the tow driver has arrived and there are some concerns about the state of the vehicle. It's my understanding that the Cohee parents don't live together, they co-parent, and the father comes and picks up the mother and they head back to the boat dock. Brian Jr. stays home. It's 3 a.m. and he's exhausted. But soon his cell phone is buzzing with a call from Mom. Brian, is there any reason why there's blood on the bumper of the car? Brian shares he can't think of any reason. Later he'll remember he'd taken a special effects class and had some fake blood packs lying around. That had to be it. At least that's what he'll tell Mom when she continues to press him later. But in the moment, he can't come up with anything. The officer has the car towed back to Brian's dad's house. Anyways, he doesn't seem too concerned. Maybe the car picked up something from the water. Maybe it's mud or muck. But yeah, it sure looks like blood smear. No matter, you folks go get some sleep. It's been a long night for y'all. The police will follow up later. Though the officer assures the frazzled parents that this is all just a case of a teenager making a silly mistake. Take it easy on him. No charges are likely to be laid. Brian Cohee Jr.'s car is towed to the Cohee father's residence, and everyone but Jr. has a fitful sleep. The next morning, Brian's father goes out to get a look at the damage to the Ford sedan. Oh my God, Brian, what the hell? What's wrong with you? Back it in. Why the fuck would you be backing in? So embarrassing down at the Life Jacket Donation Center I run down there. You know how much they're going to be making fun of me down at the Life Jacket Donation Center, Brian? Something about the whole thing has him on edge. He knows his boy, and he knows there's more to the story. He soon finds it. A wallet, frozen from having been in the water. Also, a 12-inch kitchen knife in the glove compartment. What the hell is going on here? Prying the wallet open, Senior finds the identification of a grizzly old mountain man type. Long gray beard, tan, lined face, tired old eyes, though intelligent. The name says Warren Barnes, and the identification is for a temp agency known as People Ready. Downtown Grand Junction is where it's located. Brian Cohee Sr. calls his son, he's staying at his mother's house, and asks him where the wallet came from. A groggy Brian Cohee Jr. slowly puts on his glasses, buying time to think, then feigns surprise. Oh, right. Oh, man, I forgot, Dad. I forgot that down at the boat launch, that I found that. But with everything that happened, it slipped my mind, Dad. Okay. Senior calls the temporary employment agency located downtown, this on Monday, March 1st. He explains the situation and promises to drop the wallet off. Senior learns that the man on the card, Warren Barnes, a 69-year-old homeless gentleman, had not shown up that morning, and they were all very concerned about him. Mr. Barnes never missed a day of work. He depended on it for his meager lifestyle. Senior doesn't want to admit it, but now he's worried for the old man as well. And for whatever that kitchen knife in the glove compartment of his son's waterlogged car had been for, he can't bring himself to ask his boy about that. The truth is, everybody's a little scared of Brian Cohee Jr., especially his parents, for they've suspected for a long time what he's truly all about. The Reading Man, An old cowboy that nobody knew much about other than that he was homeless, was a voracious reader, and he wasn't one to beg or bother anybody. 69-year-old Warren Barnes enjoyed his books, thrillers, those of bygone eras, preferably of the Wild West, while sitting in a bamboo chair outside a bridal shop, up against a nearly constantly sunshine-soaked brick wall off Main Street in the breezeway of downtown Grand Junction, Colorado. That bamboo chair was a gift from Monique, the bridal shop owner. Monique, along with other store owners downtown, didn't mind the presence of the so-called reading man. He'd become a fixture, in fact. Warren Barnes kept to himself, reading books supplied to him by a local bookstore. He ate Subway sandwiches almost exclusively, paid for with his own money earned from odd jobs through the local temp agency, PeopleReady. He slept under cover of the nearby highway overpass by the train tracks, within sight of the sheriff's office and county jail. Scratch that, it's more like a prison. It's a big, well-lit facility. You could set your watch each Monday morning by the reading man's arrival to the downtown core. 6 a.m. for coffee, then check in at PeopleReady to see if any work needed to be done. If not, then a long day of turning pages in the sun it would be, sipping from a flask. He had an alcohol issue. If there was work to be done, he would read after work in the afternoon up until the sun went down. He'd have a few beers under the bridge, eat his little Subway sandwich, and that was his lifestyle. You could set your watch by the old man, like I said, in the morning and the afternoon, the latter being Miller time, but who's perfect? Certainly not a homeless cowboy, though that's damn close. Monday, March 1st of 2021. Mr. Barnes failed to appear for 6 a.m. coffee, and time seemed to stand still for those who become so accustomed to the presence of Grand Junction's beloved reading man. When the PeopleReady temp agency receive a call from Mr. Cohey to let them know that the wallet was found down at the Blue Heron boat launch by his son, the downtown community of business owners who care about the reading man take action. The woman from the bridal shop, Monique Linotti, who had set up a bamboo chair at the side of her shop's brick wall for the homeless Warren Barnes every day for years, is one of a few who go to police and express their concern. They know that a missing homeless man won't be top priority, and make an effort on the reading man's behalf. This idea that nobody would notice or care if a street person fell through a gutter grate and disappeared forever is true some places, but not in Grand Junction. The reading man's killer underestimated his worth to the community. The reading man's killer is, of course, Brian Cohey Jr. The old cowboy's head and hands are tucked away in bags back in the closet, a closet his mother rummages through on Monday morning, this March 1st, once Brian borrows his brother Andy's car and heads out to visit a friend. She, the mother, has a bad feeling about the whole car in the river incident. The blood, now a wallet belonging to a missing man found in the car. The mother, Terry Cohey, finds a bag in a box in her son's closet. The bag seems wet. It has maggots crawling on it. So she carries the box to the kitchen sink, where she can get a better look. Soon she's calling 911 as the sight of a hairy head and bloodied ear scares the life out of her. Terry suddenly knows that her son is a stranger, and God knows what he'll do if he comes home to find his secret in the sink.
I think it's a human head.
It's a what?
I think it's a human head.
Why do you think it's that?
Because it looks like it's one ear.
Once Terry finally convinces the 911 operator that this is a human head in the sink, she gets off the phone and calls every parent of the kids she's currently watching at her home daycare. That's right, there's little kids in the house, and a very dangerous young man is going to be home any minute. And God knows what he's capable of if he's got a decapitated head and hands in his closet. Brian arrives home just before police arrive and goes without a fight. You can hear the father say to Brian on the cop's body cam, to cooperate. And Brian turns to him and says, I'll cooperate and relax. Kind of sounds like Napoleon Dynamite. Come on, Dad, relax. You know, type, leave me alone, man. I can handle this. I'm grown up. I killed a guy. When the cop asks him what's in the sink, Brian coldly responds, a human head and hands. The human head in the sink is confirmed by the officer to be the real deal. Brian Cohey, however, is not getting the same treatment. He's taken to a squad car without cuffs on by a female officer, The officer who takes him to the station asks if he wants the air conditioning on. She actually asks if he's warm-blooded or cold-blooded, to which Brian responds, "I'm cold-blooded." He's a little irritated, it seems, that he's not being treated with the respect a killer should be treated with. He'd see it as respect if he was being treated like the animal that he is. But they're treating him just like a kid. They're being very polite to him. Working with what they got is what they're doing. But you can tell Brian is confused as to why he doesn't have any cuffs on. As they drive under the overpass near the jail and Grand Junction Police Station, Brian remarks that that's the bridge right there. When they reach the station, he's led to an interrogation room. It's not clear if the officers have had a conversation about there being a human head in the sink here. This female officer is just walking beside the towering killer into the police station. He asks again, "Shouldn't I be cuffed?" And she goes, "Nah. That's strange. Nobody seems to be taking this seriously." That will change once the interrogation begins, however, and Brian Cohey spills his guts over how he spilled the reading man's guts. The cold young man waves his rights and gets right to it. There's no point in stalling. The head of his victim is in his mother's sink. Also, Brian Cohey Jr. wants some respect here. This is a big deal. At least it should be. And he's set on making an impression here. Cohey had never been taken seriously. Friends, family, teachers, they'll all later say that the signs had been there looking back because Brian openly proclaimed his fascination with murder, wrote about it in his journals, chose serial killers and school shooters as his topic of choice at any given opportunity, said that he wanted to kill homeless people and prostitutes, collected weapons and other items, you know, like rope and masks and gloves and zip ties that would be considered hit kit material if he were genuinely someone to be considered dangerous. His parents didn't think so. They thought it was just a kind of a phase he was going through his entire life. It seems that everyone thought it was an act Brian was performing, a shtick. His nickname at school was Dahmer, but Cohey considered himself more an Ed Kemper type. He looks a little like Big Ed. Not nearly as intelligent, though he thinks he is. After the homeless guy, he'd hoped to graduate to girls, he says, to co-eds, the types he knew he could never score with, honestly. But despite how much he'd prepared, it had been a one and done. And as investigators listened to the confession of Brian Cohey Jr., they begin to thank their lucky stars he'd been discovered so early, as this kid clearly could have been a huge problem. He'd been thinking about it for about a year. That Saturday night, Cohey had been ready. He just needed to have the freedom of driving alone to pull it off. As soon as his mother had given him the green light, Cohey sped off into the night. A 12-inch kitchen knife, his weapon, 3 pairs of gloves to be sure no prints would be left behind. He talks about how intelligent he thinks he is, talking about how latex gloves, if you just use them, then a print could actually press through those if they're too thin. So he puts on 3 pairs of gloves. One way to avoid what he's worried about here is just to put on gloves that aren't latex, but fine, 3 pairs of gloves. The hubris of this young killer is off the charts. He explains to detectives every step and the thought behind it, believing he's impressing when in reality he's only being led into a slam dunk case for the prosecution. He's explaining to experts things about their trade that aren't quite right, and even when they are right, they're not that impressive. He just is giving a heartless confession. He's proud of the murder and wants the world to know how impressive it was. And for that, I gotta give him a little credit. Cohey dressed in his Halloween outfit from the previous year at Michael Myers. He has the coveralls, the knife, and the white inhuman mask. Cohey drove around Grand Junction searching for his perfect victim, finally finding one just after 11 p.m. The reading man, 69-year-old Warren Barnes, wrapped up in his sleeping bag in a tarp, a shadowy form under the bridge, lit up slightly by the somewhat distant though extremely bright lights of the Grand Junction Jail, is too tempting for Brian to pass up. He says to himself, that's a homeless person, and they're in a secluded spot, hidden by the road. Brian Cohey cuts the lights on his Ford sedan. He pulls in behind a support pillar for the overpass, so he's hidden from the road. It's quite dark down here. This is it. He's really going to do it, he realizes. Brian knows, as he dons his Mike Myers mask, grabs the kitchen knife with his triply gloved hand, and swings his large coverall-cloaked frame out from the vehicle, that he is no longer a stinky boy. He's a stinky, dirty man. Stinky, dirty, dirty, stinky. The words spew from his mouth and he can't help himself. He has to work to keep himself quiet. Stinky, dirty, dirty, stinky. There's a war that's always been raging inside Cohey. As he approaches the sleeping man, Grand Junction's reading man, up a gravel slope and towards the train tracks, this war seems to resolve itself. Brian Cohey Jr., for the first time in his life, is clear. He's who he wants to be. Stinky, dirty, dirty, stinky. The words whisper behind the mask. Then a growl emerges as Cohey rips the tarp open, exposing the old cowboy, and begins slamming the knife into Warren Barnes' neck. And there's not much of a fight. The reading man, surrounded by old books and his most recent Subway sandwich wrappers, tries to escape the attack, but it's relentless. He manages to ask the horror that's killing him without ceremony, quote, "Why are you doing this?" Cohey, in a frenzy, snarling like a rabid dog, lets the old man know that, "I've been wanting to do this for a long fucking time," before finishing the damning deed. He cuts the reading man's head off, then his hands. Cohey places the head in a trash bag. He puts the hands in a Ziploc bag he brought along for this purpose. These are the most identifiable pieces of his victim. Clearly, this has been thought out. Later, Brian's search history will prove he'd been preparing mightily for this opportunity. The heads and hands will go home with him. He has this 3-3-3 rule, the rule of three. 3 days starts to stink. 3 months starts to decompose. 3 years skeletonizes or something. It's one of the things that he explains to the detectives who are experts on such subjects and primps himself when they say, oh yeah, that makes sense. Those head and hands obviously will be discovered by his mother on Monday, as we know. Could this be your summer of discovery? Yeah, with Rosetta Stone it could be. Whether you're traveling abroad, planning a staycation, or just shaking up your routine, what better time to dive into a new language? With Rosetta Stone, you could turn downtime into meaningful progress. Rosetta Stone is a trusted leader in language learning for over 30 years. Their immersive, intuitive method helps you naturally absorb and retain your new language on desktop or mobile, whenever and wherever it fits your summer schedule. I've been using it to try to learn Japanese, as I mentioned already multiple times. I mean, Rosetta Stone and I are good friends at this point, and I'm surprised how quickly you can pick things up in bite-sized lessons. And what I mean by that is, like, if you're planning on going somewhere or interacting with someone who has another language underneath their belt or a country that is required to speak that language wherever you are in certain situations, you can pick up bite-sized things to get you by. And I really like that about it. And it makes you feel like you are learning when you haven't developed the entire scope of it. At least you have a foot in the door with these bite-sized lessons and learning with their true accent feature. Rosetta Stone is the trusted language expert. It has 30 years of experience teaching people. I mean, there's millions of users and 25 languages to choose from, including Spanish, French, German, Japanese, and more. Rosetta Stone is a go-to tool for real language growth. And you can learn faster, retain longer. The big thing with Rosetta Stone for me is that you get this lifetime membership with them when you sign on, and you just never know when it's going to come in handy. Whatever trip comes up in the future, you can prepare yourself with this in your back pocket. So don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential right now. Dark Topic listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Go to rosettastone.com/today and start learning today. This episode is brought to you by IQ Bar, our exclusive snack and hydration sponsor here at Dark Topic. And we're so excited to announce they've teamed up with Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry, on two special edition products, a salted caramel chip protein bar and a yuzu mango hydration mix drink. And I've been eating a whole hell of a lot of salted caramel chip protein bars. I don't get sick of them. That's one thing I'll say about those. It's a great treat. And decent for you, as well as the yuzu mango hydration mixed drink. I mean, I'll have one before bed. I'll have one when I wake up in the morning. Something about it. I mean, really great flavor. And makes me feel like I came back to life after I chug one of those bad boys. IQ Bars plant protein bars. They're mixed with clean, delicious ingredients that keep you physically and mentally fit. The salted caramel chip IQ bar that I just mentioned there, it has 12 grams of protein and only 1 gram of sugar. And it has brain-boosting nutrients in it like lion's mane, adaptogen. The Yuzu Mango IQ Mix is a refreshing zero-sugar hydration mix that marries bold flavor and essential electrolytes for your body and lion's mane plus magnesium for your brain. Just mix with water for Michelin star taste and next level hydration. 10% of sales, I should mention, go to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, which supports the next generation of aspiring U.S. chefs. With over 20,000 five-star reviews and counting, more people than ever are fueling their busy lifestyles with IQ bars, brain, clearly I didn't drink my yuzu drink this morning, brain and body boosting bars, hydration mixes, and mushroom coffees. This is the snack that you should start stocking in your cupboards when you go to reach for that, you know, ice cream at night, that chocolate bar during the day. I'd suggest reach for an IQ bar. They sent me the salted caramel chip IQ bar, the yuzu mango mix, and I mean, again, I've been going back and forth on those, and I just can't believe that something so delicious could be so good for me. And right now, IQ Bar is offering our special podcast listeners 20% of all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. To get your 20% off, text DARK to 64,000. Text DARK to the number 64,000. That's DARK to 64,000. Message and data rates may apply. See terms for details.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Dressed as a horror movie villain, Kohi continues whispering, "Stinky, dirty, 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 stinky," as he continues to mutilate the body. This work is for fun. Kohi is fascinated as he cuts open the belly to spill the guts. "So pink in the dim light," he observes. He cuts the arms off, at the elbow, then the shoulder, throwing the pieces away as he completes each section. He goes back to the head and stabs out the eyes. Kohi will later proudly share that he'd given the face a Glasgow smile. Detectives ask what that is, and he schools them on this as well. "Oh, you know, that's cutting the mouth on each side, up like a smile, you know, like the Joker." Brian Kohi Jr., finally satisfied, left the gutted, headless, armless, handless corpse alone and carried his trophies, the head and hands, back to the car before driving away. Once home, he showered, put his coveralls in the wash, took his gloves off, and that's when he saw there was a hole in one of the fingertips. "Oh my fucking gosh, shit. 3 pairs of gloves and he's got a hole in the fingertip, exposing his fingerprint." He tries to sleep, but is experiencing some anxiety over the possibility of having left a partial print of this scene. "Stinky, dirty, dirty, stinky, stupid." Kohi dresses and gets back in his car. Mom's sleeping. Even if she woke up, Terry knows her boy said that he wants to take late drives, and he may do it at any given hour. This is cover for himself, but something that wouldn't be unusual, an unusual thing for her son to do, go for a late night drive to clear his head, she figures, now that he's able to drive on his own. The 19-year-old, the killer, returns to the crime scene. He picks up what's left of the body and drags it to his trunk. Then he drives down to the Blue Heron boat launch at the Colorado River, where his dad is a volunteer. What is it? Where his dad hands out life jackets to people in canoes and stuff. Pretty important work. It's around 2 a.m. when he backs the car to the water, dumps the body directly into the flowing river, where it immediately begins floating downstream. It's still armless, headless. Brian has left the arms back of the scene. He's not thinking straight at this time. The rest we already know. The car slides into the river as Kohi, a new driver, fails to pull away and instead slides into the water. Once he understands that he's fucked, he gets out, struggles to shore in the freezing water, and flags down a truck. The occupants, a father and son, help the bespectacled boy with the baby face and red cheeks The shivering young man who's in over his head, swearing to himself about being fucked, about being so fucking fucked. He's flapping his hands and pushing up on his glasses and freaking out, stimming like crazy. This is messed up. Of course, he eventually is fucked. It takes a bit of time, but it all becomes clear once the head is found and the interrogation yields more information than most suspects are willing to share or can even remember if they wanted to share. Brian Cohey Jr. is found guilty of first-degree murder, tampering with evidence, and a dead body. He receives life in prison without the possibility of parole and two concurrent 12-year sentences for his treatment of the body. In court, Brian Cohey shows off a tattoo behind his right ear, a black inverted cross. There is no remorse, only pride, and some regret that he had never got the chance to reach his full potential. He was just getting started. He promises that there would have been more. Women. That's what he'd been preparing for. Abducting, torturing, killing women. He quotes Ed Kemper and talks about how, yeah, there's part of me that wants to treat women nice and there's part of me that wants to see what their head looks like on a stick. Experts have no doubt that if he'd been allowed to mature, had he been free until, say, the age of 30, the world would know the killer we briefly just met in Stinky Dirty. And that will do it. I have to shout out the YouTube channel Explore With Us. I got a lot of the information there because they had access to the interrogation tapes and the cops' body cams and all that. So there's a link to that in the show notes if you'd like to see all of that. There's one moment where the cops find the arm and a partial part of the other arm of Warren Barnes underneath the overpass. And a woman cop, she starts cackling, starts laughing really loudly. And I guess it's a nervous response, but I really got the impression of these cops all throughout that they weren't very experienced in this kind of action. the one cop's telling her kind of like, hey, come on, this is being recorded. And that's played in court, right? Her laughing about finding body parts. Very interesting case. Very interesting area, Grand Junction, Colorado. I think I'd like to visit there. The benches downtown had been removed to deter the homeless. And Monique from Monique's Bridal Shop, she provided that bamboo chair for the homeless Warren Barnes because she knew that he was harmless. She knew he wasn't going to bother anybody, that he just wanted to sit there and read his books. And that's in fact what he did there for years. He would say, there's a quote from him that they made a statue for him, a bronze statue, I guess. And it was a chair and books. And on one of the books, it says, "And you also." That's what the soft-spoken 69-year-old homeless Warren Barnes would say to people when they told him to have a good day. He would say, "And you also." And that was nice that they had that on one of the books, I thought. Really nice that they even did that for the guy. I think that he would be impressed with how many people really cared about him in downtown Grand Junction. All right, I got a couple of $25 tier shout-outs from Patreon. Mary Alexander, thank you, Mary. And Crystal J, thank you so much, Crystal J. Thank you to everybody who comes over and supports exclusively at Patreon or at Apple Plus. I know I talk about it all the time, and I'm pretty sure a lot of you are sick of seeing the exclusive stuff show up on Apple and you can't access it. There's a solution there. You can get free access for 3 days if you want to hear some of that stuff and check it out, see if it's something you want to, you know, check out. That's just how I make a living. Sorry about that. And on that note, I am trying to put out more consistent dark topics, so it's just not overrun by exclusive content here. But a lot going on over on Patreon. And also I do the podcast Marooned with Aaron Hable of Generation Y. And that's on its own feed. You just got to search Marooned. It's free to listen to. There's been some confusion about that. I don't know. I'll be back soon. I hope you're all doing well. I'm doing great. I'm doing real good. And again, if you want to see a wider story or just the really technical story that you just heard, in a video form, there's a link in the show notes to Explore With Us. That's the name of the channel. Spring is springing, and summertime's on the way. I hope all of you are feeling great and positive, as I am. And, well, this is awkward. Bye. Eyes cocked. Hey, until next time, keep those eyes cocked, those doors locked, stay paranoid. Thank you so much. Talk at you soon.